The following is an AI reading of my blog called
The Road to Bitcoin Adoption Part 1. What are the success criteria for Bitcoin?
It is for people who don't have time to read blogs and can listen to podcasts though. So, let's go!
Debates about how wider adoption of Bitcoin will occur are popular among Bitcoiners, though not all that useful. Personally, of course, I have no idea how it will happen. But it's nice to talk about a few schools of thought as they have broader world, new connections. And since our eyes only see and our ears only hear what our brains are looking for, I'd like to highlight the underrated, but in my opinion, most important modes of adoption. But before that, let's consider what the criteria for the success of Bitcoin are. When do we say adoption is successful? What are we moving towards? The success criteria of Bitcoin adoption. Opinions differ on the success criteria, as well as on the best path to Bitcoin adoption, and are interrelated. I'll start with my controversial view that Bitcoin is already a successful project. If Bitcoin hadn't already gained popularity regarding services, liquidity, or adoption, it would still function effectively for me, my social circle, and my use cases. The main requirement is that there's no significant decline, particularly in services and adoption. Services may come and go, but with regards to long-term success, Bitcoin doesn't necessarily have an advantage, especially considering regulatory challenges. As for adoption, it might decrease. However, given the current global economic situation, I don't foresee this as a highly plausible scenario. Technologically speaking, advancements continue, although present technology might not be adequate to address future issues such as scaling or security concerns. In essence, I am content, and if Bitcoin remains relatively unchanged, I do not mean growth in terms of development across all levels, but rather stagnation, I would still be satisfied. Bitcoin offers protection from confiscation, overtaxation, inflation, capital restrictions, easy transfer across any border, and regulatory challenges. Other common criteria for success that are not personally important include: first, expressing prices in BTC or sats, although some companies, like Liberation Travel and Services, such as Nostr, already quote their prices in Bitcoin or Satoshis, or use BTC as a unit of account. I don't consider this to be a significant criterion for success. Changing the way we think about value is difficult. For example, I grew up in Slovakia, where we transitioned from Slovak crowns to euros. For several years after that change, people still calculated the original Slovak crown values of goods and services using the euro exchange rate, even though the currency no longer existed. Today, with modern technology, converting prices between currencies is no longer a problem. The conversion is now done automatically in an acceptable way for me, so I don't need to worry about it. Communication of value is simply about presenting it within the app. For example, if someone creates a Lightning invoice in Czech crowns, I can input that into my wallet or scan the QR code. Determine how many dollars, euros, or grams of gold it equates to, and then click send. When I used long-term financial planning in the past, I would often use grams of gold as a unit of account. My reason for doing so was because I didn't want to continually recalculate my plan based on price inflation, which was something unknown to me beforehand. Gold therefore proved to be a helpful unit for me to consider value, even though most of my purchases were not made using gold, but rather Slovak crowns and later euros. Alternatively, if you think about it another way, just because I see prices listed in dollars while visiting Panama and pay with euros via my card, does that mean the euro is a failed project? Simply due to the absence of euro price tags, in this instance, the vendor would indeed receive their payment in dollars. When it comes to the Czech Republic, even though not a single price tag is in euros, almost everywhere one can pay with euros in cash. Now, let's discuss institutional adoption as a success criterion for Bitcoin. There are two types of institutions that should adopt Bitcoin. The first type consists of companies that save in Bitcoin or hold it as a reserve. Ideally, the bigger the firm and publicly traded, the better. This is an acknowledgement by a large corporation that they are doing something right. However, from my perspective, this criterion is not very interesting. The fact that a corporation bought Bitcoin is nice, but it doesn't mean anything fundamental to me. The other type of institution that could start using and offering Bitcoin are large funds. With them, you can buy Bitcoin on the exchange, similar to an ETF exchange-traded fund. Although there might be minor tax advantages in some countries due to holding period tests, I don't find this way of buying Bitcoin useful as it deprives oneself of almost all the good features of Bitcoin. Institutions offer this product mainly to earn fees on it. It does not mean they trust it, they are selling it for a fee. They sell tons of products in order to make their trading fees. For Bitcoin, this is not a success criterion. There are various institutions that make money from selling Bitcoin, such as exchanges. Whether it is BlackRock and Vanguard, or Kraken and Coinbase making money on the sale, I personally don't care. Adoption by states, good regulation. The ultimate dream of adoption is when a central bank starts using Bitcoin as a reserve asset, or states start buying it for their treasuries. Imagine the central bank Slovak branch of ECB having switched to Bitcoin, at least for a few seconds. From the movie Enlightenment to the banks, states are competitors to the parallel financial system. While some may view Bitcoin's acceptance by institutions as a sign of its cool factor, we don't necessarily need their recognition, especially considering these same institutions have struggled to meet their own inflation targets and contributed to the impoverishment of many individuals. Many people consider regulation a measure of success for cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin. However, receiving approval or validation from state entities is not a significant accomplishment, in my opinion. State institutions are limited in their capabilities, and their regulatory endorsements hold little value to me. In a parallel financial system, the magic wand of the state loses its influence. I found that using Bitcoin is just as successful in countries with and without specific cryptocurrency regulation. Question: if you're so knowledgeable, can you tell us what actions states could potentially take? Answer: absolutely. You may find my paper on post-COVID economic recovery informative. The percentage of the population using Bitcoin is another factor to consider, whether it's at the city, country, or global level. If this number approaches 100%, we're moving closer to hyper-Bitcoinization. However, I personally don't think this is an essential criterion. Let individuals decide if they find Bitcoin useful and beneficial for their lives. Forcing people into using it, like in El Salvador, isn't right. It's better when someone chooses to use it because they genuinely want it. The number of people wanting it isn't that significant. Thankfully, market mechanisms allow any part of the population to benefit from Bitcoin. Refer to chapter 21 millionth of Infinity in my book, Cryptocurrencies Hack Your Way to a Better Life. Available on Amazon and also in Spanish, in my book Cryptocurrencies Hack Your Way to a Better Life, I discuss volatility, including how to prepare for it, manage it, and even utilize it. As such, you might not be surprised that I don't view price stability as very significant. Our world is growing more chaotic due to various factors, like the rapid pace of technological advancements, the speed at which information spreads, and the failure of centralized planning, often intended to create a stable environment. In my opinion, learning to thrive in a volatile setting is far superior. I perceive prices as an information system, with their fluctuations reflecting changes in relative supply and demand. The price of money and interest rates are crucial pieces of information. Instead of focusing on specific prices or rates, it's important to understand what a particular price signifies and benefit from both low and high prices. To achieve this, one must manage personal stress responses to volatility, develop strategies for varying prices, and interpret the actions suggested by those prices, such as producing goods, consuming overproduction, conserving scarce resources by delaying consumption, and so on. Thanks to Bitcoin, we are now experiencing real market prices. However, this is not the case with interest rates. It's still generally more advantageous to borrow fiat money, which loses value over time. Due to arbitrage, central planners' interest rates are reflected in the crypto representation of fiat currency. After all, we too can print dollars at interest. Borrowing fiat is also, in my opinion, one of the best strategies to deal with Bitcoin volatility. We save in Bitcoin at any price and use Bitcoin as collateral for a fiat loan. Because of this, We don't even have to pay taxes on the sale of Bitcoin in most countries because we don't actually sell it. Repaying the fiat loan after the fiat has lost its value purchasing power is a nice bonus. You can learn more about this strategy in the mini book and course How to Harness the Value of Bitcoin Without Having to Sell It, and other strategies in the book Cryptocurrencies Hack Your Way to a Better Life. So for me, volatility is not only not a problem, it prepares me for reality. The prices of airline tickets, fuel, seasonal food, and a host of other products and services are jumping up and down like a rabbit on coke by hundreds of percent. The stability that people want from Bitcoin no longer exists in this world anyway. That's why it's valuable to learn how to live in this world in accordance with reality. General means of exchange. Another measure of Bitcoin's success for many is the ability to use it for any kind of payment, whether globally or in a specific region. However, I believe that this criterion was important at one point in time. In today's technology-driven world, I do not consider this as an important criterion anymore. If Bitcoin fulfills its promise, for example, protection from excessive taxation, asset seizures, capital restrictions, inflation, it is not so crucial whether I pay with it directly at the grocery store or if a transfer with extremely low transaction costs takes place in the background. Some people also view it as a failure when payment in Bitcoin is possible, but the recipient immediately exchanges the Bitcoin for something they prefer more, like fiat currency. I don't think it's our responsibility to micromanage what the other party does with the money we use to pay them. Should I inquire if the grocery store owner plans to purchase an electric car or a vehicle with an internal combustion engine using the profit from my transaction? Should I investigate whether they will take a vacation to the Tatra Mountains or Thailand? No, that's not relevant. My objective was fulfilled. I obtained what I desired and paid the requested amount in Bitcoin. Whether the vendor chooses to spend it on fiat currency or invests it in MicroStrategy stock is beyond my concern. Image: acquiring fiat from a P2P trader allows me to obtain the products and services I wish to buy by using my Bitcoin holdings. The fact that this process doesn't always work directly is only disadvantageous with respect to transaction costs. We can minimize these expenses through improved technologies like the Vexel app or Bitrefill. The image is from my short book titled Cypherpunk Visions and Trends 20,232,025. How to use the Vexel app. In the past, having a general means of exchange was crucial. However, if I'm protecting myself from inflation with Bitcoin and then I want to buy a holiday in Thailand, it more or less doesn't matter whether I do it directly with Bitcoin or if I purchase fiat money with low transaction costs and then use that fiat money for the holiday. Most of the time, this exchange will be invisible to me and will happen in the background. If I want more privacy, I can also, for example, swap borrowed stablecoins for cash from time to time and use that. Conclusion: I believe that, like any product on the market, Bitcoin solves specific problems. It is true that money relies on the network effect, but we must not forget what Bitcoin actually provides. For me, it is one of the few products that I can genuinely own, much like gold. It therefore safeguards me against confiscation, extreme taxation, export restrictions or capital controls, and of course, monetary inflation. If it can solve these problems for most people with enough liquidity, I think the network effect is enough to be useful already. Further adoption is a nice to have, in my opinion. The most important thing is that those who want to solve said problems can get Bitcoin and use it. And we are already there. In the next installment, we'll look at the different paths to adoption.
Thank you for listening. I'm sorry for any possible quirks generated by the large language model or text-to-speech engine, but I think it is worth transferring these blocks into audio form for people who can't or don't have time to read. So I hope it was useful to you, and I would really appreciate if you used value for value podcasting apps to listen to this episode and stream me some sets or Boost. I read all the comments on the Boosts as well. So if you have any comment about this content, Feel free to use Fountain.fm or any other app and boost this podcast. Thank you very much.